Welcome back. You're listening to the Let's Talk Gen Z podcast, where we pull interesting topics and things that should be talked about and go further into detail with. I'm Angela, and today we hope we can bring light to what's going on in Cuba, and we think it's really crucial to bring some awareness. So Natalie, can you start by telling us a brief background and history of Cuba?
Sure. The history of Cuba is characterized by dependence on outside powers: Spain, the US, and the USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. In fact, the island of Cuba was home to various American Indian cultures, like the Tianos. Unfortunately, during the Spanish expedition, Columbus marked his arrival on October 12, 1942. Spain conquered Cuba and appointed a Spanish governor to rule Havana. As a result, a series of rebellions during the 19th century failed to end Spanish rule and claimed the lives of hundreds of thousands of Cubans. The Spanish War resulted in a Spanish withdrawal from the island in 1898, and following 3.5 years of subsequent U.S. military rule. Only a while later did Cuba again gain formal independence in 1902.
What would Cuba be protesting?
Well, the people in Cuba are protesting due to the situation they are finding themselves in, due to the government's action or inaction. The situation includes the economic crisis. Cuba's economy minister, Alejandro Gil, announced that Cuba's economy shrank 11% during the pandemic, which was made worse by the U.S.-imposed trade embargo. Second, the spiraling inflation rate. There's increased sales of goods in convertible currencies like the dollar over the last year as it stopped exchanging pesos for those currencies. Pesos devalued threefold over its official rate. As an effect, prices have skyrocketed and inflation will likely come at a minimum of 500%. Thirdly, there's scarcity of food. People have to wait in line for more than 8 hours for food, and food are being resold in black markets for twice its price. Fourthly, the government declines to import foreign vaccines through a World Health Organization-led COVAX dose-sharing initiative. Instead, they chose to create its own vaccine. And finally, the police brutality, like the San Israel movement, which was started by a group of artists who has been banned for their political opinions. A lot of them got arrested or beaten up by the police. Meiko Osobu, one of these artists, was beaten and incarcerated several times for leaving the movement. Soha, what are the benefits and harms of these protests?
Great question. Let's begin on the con side. As a result of the protests, hundreds of people got injured really badly. The government even shut down tourism onto the island. On to the benefits. So first, President Miguel Díaz-Canel granted permission for people to bring food and medicine into the country without paying import duties. This is because the protests were driven by a population fed up with food and medicine shortages amid a spike in Cuba's coronavirus epidemic and the effects of its worst economic crisis in 30 years. Moreover, President Joe Biden is considering helping the people of Cuba. He said that it would require a guarantee that they wouldn't be taken advantage of by the government, which of course is amazing. Speaking about America, how has the U.S. and even other countries played a role in the harming of Cuba, Lily?
There are many ways countries played a role in harming Cuba. U.S. sanctions against Cuba not only hurt both Cuban and American citizens, but also serve none of their intended political ends for the United States. They are aimed at pressuring Cuba to liberalize and democratize, but such results have failed to materialize. Instead, sanctions have become a source of both economic and humanitarian damages for both Cubans and Americans. The sanctions were first implemented in October 1960 and banned the trade of all goods except food and humanitarian supplies and have never been lifted ever since. It hurts the Cuban people by making food and medical products more difficult to obtain and by restricting people-to-people contact between Americans and Cubans. According to the United Nations, the embargo has cost Cuba roughly $130 billion in economic value over 6 decades. Although this number may seem negligible, it is in fact about 1.5 times Cuba's annual GDP of $87 billion. This evidence has led me to derive the conclusion that U.S. policy towards Cuba has not been formulated on the basis of sound judgments about strategies that will best promote human rights and social justice on the island, but on the basis of outdated Cold War ideology and special interest group politics.
Moving on from this discussion, social media has been impacting these protests and allowed for their protesters to voice their opinions. When thousands of Cubans took the streets to protest this month, their calls for freedom and an end of the dictatorship were heard across the world, thanks to the rise in social media. Gathered protesters shared their images and videos of the protests via Facebook Live broadcasts, known on the island as Direct. Luis Carlos Diaz, a Venezuelan journalist specializing in online activism, said that live broadcasts or instant messages can make the protests visible outside of Cuba, but they have a limited effect within its borders. Internet circumvention tools have helped some Cubans to stay online, including Siphon, a tool developed with funding from the Open Technology Fund, known as OTF. Part of the U.S. Agency for Global Media, OTF promotes internet freedom and supports open source technology to help citizens in the most censored countries. So Aparna, how can our audience help the Cuban people?
Great question. There are many ways our audience can help the Cuban people. First, do your research and help spread the word through social media by telling everyone how they can help too. It is so important and crucial to keep yourself educated during these such times in order to spread awareness and take action. 2. Write to your representatives. One of the most critical things you can do is to write to your senators, congressmen, and congresswomen about the current situation in Cuba. Reaching out to them not only increases visibility on the topic, but it also pressures them to recognize their dictatorship. Moreover, asking the U.S. for humanitarian intervention can help alleviate the dire situation students are in. 3. Listen to Cuban voices. Independent journalists and bloggers risk their freedom every day to report the current situation in Cuba. Yoani Sanchez at 14 My Medio, El Toque, and Abraham Jimenez Oinoa are just some of the journalists and blogs in Cuba worth noting and reading. 4. Donate recharges to cell phones. The internet in Cuba is extremely expensive for the average Cuban. The government's tight control of the internet sets prices that are unattainable. Providing citizens with internet is essential to getting their stories out. Cubanos Palante has been on a recharge campaign that you can donate to.
To sum up what we have just talked about, Cuba is a country that's long been conquered by many countries, and now in the present, Cuban citizens are protesting their rights for food, money, and everyday needs. We should all gather and help them by raising awareness, educating ourselves, and contacting our governments, as well as donating if we can. Thank you so, so much for joining us on this week's episode of Let's Talk Gen Z. Make sure to follow our Instagram page at Let's Talk Gen Z and at Gen Z We Are The Future. And share your thoughts on this topic there or through email. Have a nice day and see you in the next episode. Bye!